All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Can you see it? Did you
notice? Check, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a bank pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams leaves the puck.
To the line, Hughes, Jones!
You're listening to Canucks Conversation.
Quinn Hughes beat reporter here. Like, I won't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
A member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted him in and down Wednesday.
Wow. We should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What our house. Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores!
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you by the great folks at Zephyr Epic. You can use promo code HOCKEYSEASON, capital H, capital S, all one word, HOCKEYSEASON at ZephyrEpic.com, Z-E-P-H-Y-R, Epic, on all platforms. Lots of good stuff going on at Zephyr Epic right now. You can follow them on all social medias. Got the weekly case breaks on Twitch. Check those out for sure. And also, those Upper Deck Series 1 cards. Those are out. People are trying to get their hands on those. Go to Zephyr Epic to do it. Two cities, Harmon. My name is Dave Wichelli, joined as always by Chris Faber and Harmon Dial. Well, not Harmon is not always here, but you're here today. Harmon, two cities.
From Victoria to Halifax.
Okay, that's fair.
I was trying to think of letters. The letters coordinating with each other, but I couldn't do it.
I'll give you one. From Victoria to Victoriaville.
Wow.
All the way across the country.
Wow. So yes, all orders over $50 at Zephyr Epic. They will ship anywhere in Canada on all orders.
Even Victoriaville.
Even Victoriaville. And you get $5 off your order with our promo code HockeySeason, capital H, capital S. And we are also delivered to you by the great folks at DoorDash. Use promo code CONVODD, capital C, capital D's, all one word, CONVODD. That will get you 25% off and free delivery on your first order on DoorDash. Does not get much better than that, folks. My name is Dave Petrelli. I'm realizing now that I'm introducing myself twice, but we are very pleased to be joined in studio by Harmon Dial of The Athletic. Harmon, what's going on today?
Doing great. It was a great start of the day at the Canucks Autism Network luncheon. And recording now, me and Faber are going to go to the Abbotsford Canucks home opener right after. So it's a busy, busy day on the schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. Just came back from the Canucks Autism Network luncheon. It was a lot of fun. We're all wearing suits. We're all wearing our little...
Not Faber.
No. But I'm wearing the nicest shoes that... No, yours are pretty nice, too. Well, no, yours look like they're from the kind you might get at Walmart for dress shoes. I got these
for like $15.
I was going to say, yeah.
They're nice shoes,
you know,
though.
What? Well, here's the problem. I was going to wear my suit today. Yeah. And I was all excited. You know, I've never worn this suit, right? I bought it last year because I was like, maybe there's an outside shot I get on TV and be one of these big shots like Harmon Dial or something. And I hop on the panel with Murph. So I bought a suit for that occasion. Haven't worn it. It's still in like the Moore's bag. Hasn't been touched. And I was like, this is a good time to wear it. Wear it to the luncheon. But I go looking because I can't wear brown shoes with a black suit. Harm, right? I can't do that?
No.
Okay. So no. I didn't do that, but I'm looking for black shoes. I go to the Bay. That seems like a spot for shoes, right? So I look at the dress shoes. Biggest size is like 9.5 at the Bay. So then I go across to Moore's, and I knew I wasn't going to get shoes at Moore's because the guy coming up to help me, he's like 5'3". He's probably got like size 7 shoes. And I just knew from the guy that was helping me. I said, there's no chance they have size 13s in here. So he's like, what can I help you with? And I was like, I just need a pair of black dress shoes, size 13s. He's like, I'll go check the back. I don't think we have any. I sat there for like 15 minutes, just like an idiot, sitting in one of the Moore's chairs. And I knew they, like, I was just wasting time pretty much. And he comes out, he's like, we have a pair of winter boots. And I was like, okay, well, I told you I need dress shoes. Like, I don't need like a one pair of winter boots that they had in there. So I had to go with the burgundy pants again. My I think I wore this exact same outfit to one of the training camp days.
Looks good.
It's a good look. Me and Harm were saying on the way in, like the brown shoes and the burgundy pants kind of pops a little bit.
Yeah, it looks good.
You've got yourself a little surprise coming too. I think you might want to go with brown shoes on your outfit.
I absolutely am. And I have this reversible belt that is brown on the other side.
Same thing.
Yeah. Man, it's clutch.
Reversible belt.
Absolutely. It's absolutely clutch.
But that lunch, I tell you, it was good. You know, I'm a big big fan and supporter of the Canucks Autism Network. What they were able to do, story was great to hear. And to see how much money they raised, it was awesome.
Yeah.
I think it was a great little event there. And the lunch was solid. But you guys didn't touch your salads.
I ate half of it.
No, you ate one roll of cucumber.
No. I wolfed through half of the salad. I did.
Did you?
I did. We took the picture, and then I wolfed through half of the salad.
Okay. Really?
Good for you.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, well, you didn't even touch yours, Quads. And
I had the cucumber.
I don't even know if that happened.
I had all the cucumber. It was
okay,
good.
Well, good for you. And then you weren't able to eat the cheesecake, which was dessert was presented right in front of us. I thought tempting for me the whole time. So yeah. I'm going to get a little
right off the hop.
Little fork in there off the top. And this is the kind of fancy lunch where they got four different forks, two knives that these fancy knives here, they give you two different knives. They're all fancy. They both look like knives to butter your bread with. I'm trying to cut the chicken. With these knives, they're so, like, yeah, I get it. Cool, they're fancy. But just give me, like, a steak knife. Give me some sort of knife to cut into a piece of chicken with. I felt like I was buttering the chicken as I was cutting through it. But you couldn't eat the cheesecake because you're a nut allergy. But they brought you out fruit. And you were probably not even going to eat that in the first place. But little milestone in David Quadrelli's life tonight. First time eating, I'll let you tell the people what you had for the first time since you were 7 years old.
Seven or eight, something around there. That I realized that was the age where I wrote off most foods and like most fruit. But I tried strawberries like for the first time since I was eight. And it was good. I liked them. It was much like my shrimp experience where I had smelled shrimp. I don't even think I'd ever even tasted it. And I just looked at it and decided I didn't like shrimp.
See, the smell is so much worse than the taste of shrimp. So that's too bad. The smell would put you off. I can understand that. But strawberries, like, I don't know how you've gone that long without having strawberries. They're so good. Like, strawberries are just
I'm a picky eater, and I'm like, Quads,
Yeah. How? I know, man. Well, at least I'm not putting like ketchup on my strawberries. Like you were.
I didn't put ketchup.
Parman was doing that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I waved down at the Weston Bayshore at this like fancy lunch. I was like, yeah, I need some ketchup for my strawberries, definitely.
Man. He asked Yannick Hansen himself to get him ketchup.
I did, yeah.
Yannick Hansen walked by.
Yeah, a couple of speakers. There's some NHL alum at every table. Except for us because we're the media table. They weren't going to stick a player with us.
Yeah, it was just Wags. It was okay.
Just us and Wags. Actually, you know, I don't think you talked to them very much, but our old friends from Labatt were there.
That was who that
sitting beside you there, yeah.
I had no idea.
You know, a little bad blood, not sponsors of the show anymore.
Little bad blood. That's why I didn't talk to them. Yeah. Didn't acknowledge them. It was done on purpose.
Aside from that, lunch was good. Really good little. First time you say the word, because I'm going to screw it up here. The little pasta, potato pasta. What are they called?
Gnocchi.
Gnocchi. That's the first time Harm had it, too.
Yeah, it was good.
It is good. Really I would good. Say, like, you know.
See, you guys having gnocchi for the first time is, like, crazier to me than me eating a straw dog.
That's not my first time, but.
Oh, okay.
That, like, I've only had gnocchi for the first time, like, maybe 2-3 years ago. Mm. That's one of the most underrated foods on the market because I like mashed potatoes. I love pasta. And that's kind of like a mix of the both. That's how I kind of was explaining it to Harm. It's kind of like it's potato pasta. And I tell you, it's the texture. If you nail it, and they did, obviously, like whoever was chefing it up back there making that, they absolutely nailed it because those were good little,
those were pretty good.
Little pillowy.
I've had bad gnocchi, and it is like
gummy.
Yeah, I don't want to say where it was, but yeah, it was bad.
Wasn't Amore, was it?
Of course not.
What's the latest? Pass Amore here. They're moving in the new place here.
Yes, Claudio's moving in to Skyline Drive there. Yeah. By the Solar.
We
got to
get back on the phone lines and get another sponsor here. That seems like a slam dunk.
That's a free ad though. That's a free ad. We always give free ads to Pasta Amore. It's no free ads except for Pasta Amore. But we have a hockey
and Burger King
to talk to. Yeah, Burger King.
I almost got Burger King the other day after what we had.
Really?
Yeah,
like again.
Well, yeah, because I didn't. It was about 7:30 at night. I've been running around since 5 in the morning, and I hadn't eaten that day yet. And I was driving in, and my girlfriend said, she's like, I got crackers and cheese at the house for you. So, you know, I've been eating crackers and cheese for dinner for the last month. Like, I don't know, like I'm literally eating like you two pretty much is what I've been eating for dinner. So I was like, I almost went through the drive through. I even like made the turn to go to Burger King and I was like, I'll just have the crackers and cheese. Like, you know, we had some Gouda. That's some good stuff. That's good quality cheese. So I skipped it, but, still like I'll go back to Burger King after what we had. Like the Whoppers were really good.
I mean, can't complain. It was pretty solid. That flame grilled patty, that's pretty good. But we do have some hockey to talk
about. I've heard some rumors about Burger King though. Back in the day, like I don't know if you guys ever heard this rumor. You guys ever hear about Burger King? Apparently, what I've heard, and I don't know if this is true or not, they cook all their meat in the morning. Like they flame grill it all in the morning and then they keep it as a warmer. Just a rumor I've heard. All right, get to your hockey thing or whatever.
Oh, you mean the thing that this podcast is actually about?
We got a 3-star review on Apple Podcasts and they said probably the second best Canucks podcast out there. All you got to do is skip the first 8 to 10 minutes for the good stuff. Three-star review. Appreciate that.
Wow. Okay. Fair enough.
So what are we at? 8 to 10 minutes?
I'm trying to drive the bus here. I'm trying to get you going here. Canucks just wrapped up a game against the Chicago Blackhawks. This was a big, big game, guys. Like that game that they had against Buffalo. Talking to the players and just, you know, what we were hearing and everything. It wasn't like this was something that was just getting overblown in the media. Like this was actually a wake up call for all of these players. And, you know, like Drance pointed out in the piece he wrote for The Athletic was you don't usually hear players use the word soft and you don't hear Travis Green come out and like join in on ganging up on his team. Like usually he defends his team after a tough loss, but that's not what was happening after that game against Buffalo. And they needed to bounce back on Thursday. Like, Bo Horvat almost guaranteed a win in his media availability. Like, he was like, we have to win tomorrow, basically. And honestly, like, I was going to say, like, you know, our friends at PointsBet, they didn't have this. But like, if you're following, you should have been betting on the Canucks heavily yesterday. After that game against Buffalo, that game in Chicago, you just knew the Canucks were going to win that game. Or you hoped, at least, that the Canucks were going to win that game.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say you knew. Like, going in, that game against Buffalo, the Canucks were better than they were in the two games before that. But they had to be. Like, they absolutely had to be better. There was, you know, if they got worse than every person that's panicking out there, and might be a little early for that, there would have been a lot more people. That would have multiplied by quite a bit if they would have put another stinker, to quote David Quadrelli, against the Blackhawks there. So they got good goaltending from Thatcher Demko. Obviously, he was excellent in that game. The depth was nice. There are still some things that we're going to talk about later that we've noticed haven't been great for the Vancouver Canucks. But, yeah, they had to step up and have a game like that where they just got a win. And it felt like somewhat of a gritty win. You know, you get a goal from Jason Dickinson early on. You get some goals where they're tipped in around the net, like hardworking goals. That is a huge piece of success in the NHL. Like, don't get me wrong. You can go in with the better skilled team, but if the other team's going to outwork you, they're going to get a lot more wins out of it in the end, no matter how skilled your team is. I mean, heck, even a good example was at early in the season, seeing the Detroit Red Wings, you know, they end up losing in a shootout to the Tampa Bay Lightning, but they still go in there and work and get themselves into overtime there. So you need to be able to work harder than the other team, or at least at their level. Like, you don't have to outwork every single team that you play if you're skilled like the Vancouver Canucks forward group is, but this is something that should have been building for the past few years of them not being a great team, not having a great roster. Something that you would like to see established by Travis Green is being the team that has to outwork to win, because now they have the talent where if you do outwork the other team, you will get wins. And unfortunately, like, I thought the Canucks were better, but I still don't know if the Canucks outworked the Chicago Blackhawks in that game. I think Demko was a big reason why they won that game. I think there was more scoring chances for the Chicago Blackhawks in that game, more shots on net, just a lot of control where in a game where you want to send a huge message, you would like to see total domination, not just on the scoreboard, but I think in the whole game, you would like to kind of see that. So I was pleased with the win, obviously, but not really impressed, I guess, is how I'd kind of say it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Harmon, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair assessment, and that's where now they're going up against Seattle, and it's going to be the Kraken home opener, I believe. Am I? Yeah. So, I mean, that building is going to be rocking, and you know that Seattle is going to come out of the gate hard. So that's going to be an important test for the Canucks, right? And hopefully they can kind of build on a little bit of that momentum from Chicago, because let's be honest, guys. I mean, a lot of people talked about, yeah, it's only four games, and no doubt nobody's trying to make snap judgments about the team. But again, like we talked about, that wasn't just a loss against Buffalo. That was kind of a no-show. And you know, at the start of the season is when you set the tone for, hey, this is a fresh start. And, you know, getting that win against Chicago, man, that was just so, so important. And I mean, my biggest takeaway from that was just, man, not all of Vancouver's top guys are really going yet, but Quinn Hughes looked phenomenal. Like, that's the best hockey I've seen from Quinn Hughes in a long time. It looked like I was watching the rookie season version of Hughes, the way he was dominating puck possession, the way he was a one-man breakout machine in zone offensively. I believe he was the one that took the point shot that deflected in, right? Yep. And then he had another one.
100th point right there on that one.
Yeah, and there was another one that rang off the bar on the power play. And even just defensively, the amount of plays he broke up with his anticipation with this stick work, there were no defensive breakdowns. I mean, that to me was vintage Quinn Hughes. And that was a big reason why I think they came out on top with that W.
Well, you say vintage Quinn Hughes, but I, like, you're saying,
it's weird to say that, but well, like, no, but I haven't seen that in a while, and it just, like, brings joy to me, you know?
To that point, though, like you mentioned it, you're saying there's a lot of things that we're seeing from Quinn Hughes, like we saw in his rookie season, but the defending that we've seen for Quinn Hughes is something that we've never seen, I think, and so early, right? It's so early, but what a great way to start the season for Quinn Hughes defensively, when the things that you're talking about there, Harm, about how he's breaking up plays when they're just entering the blue line. Like, I've seen the things that I loved about Jack Rathbone in the AHL last year, like, obviously everything he did offensively was great, but seeing Jack Rathbone just, like, you know, when you, like, go to punch your friend and you, like, make him flinch, that's kind of what, like, Quinn Hughes and Jack Rathbone both do with players are coming at the blue line. Like, when they're trying to gain the zone, they just give them a little bit of the body to make them, you know, stop at the blue line or just hesitate for that split second. And as soon as they hesitate for a split second, guys like Hughes and Rathbone, who aren't the biggest bodies, that's when they can get in on the stick check. And that's when they just gain that half a millisecond, it feels like, from making them flinch or just pause at the blue line for one quick second. That's what I'm seeing from Quinn Hughes a lot this year. And I know you mentioned vintage Quinn Hughes, but this looks like a very much upgraded Quinn Hughes defensively from your seeing how he's defending the rush. And that's something that last year definitely was a part that fell off from his game. I think that was a weaker performance than it was in his rookie year. But this year, I know it's so early, but you're right. Like, this impact that Quinn Hughes has on this defense core and how it kind of balances out the rest of them takes a lot of pressure off of OEL. Like, look at how much better OEL looks when he doesn't have to be that number one guy. Obviously, he hasn't had to be that for a while. He had Chychrun in Arizona before. If Quinn Hughes can take that pressure off of OEL, that's what's going to let OEL succeed here in Vancouver and potentially for a long time, right? Like, I know that we're going to see how he ages over the time. And obviously 6 years on a contract is long, but if Quinn Hughes can take a lot of pressure off of him, I think he's going to be able to age a lot better than having being forced to be the number one guy.
Yeah. And the other thing with Hughes too, is the way he's able to, you can tell when he's on his game, he can control just the flow and the momentum, and just, he's someone who can single-handedly turn the tide of a game. And I think that's, again, that's just so important for this back end right now. And you talk about his defensive game. I really, really think that he has a chip on his shoulder about that. I think he's totally. Someone who is, he's a very proud player, is what you kind of understand when you get to know Quinn. And I just think the circumstances of last season were so wonky, and it was such a weird situation where he, you know, no preseason, no chance to get accustomed to Travis Hamonic at the time. And Hamonic, because he hadn't played, he'd missed out on the bubble, joined the team late in camp. Hamonic had an awful start too. And so it was just the way that COVID season went for Hughes. It felt like that was an anomaly. And I think now with a fresh start, we're just seeing the potential of what he can be. And I think I really do believe that he's put a lot of effort into things like his backward skating, and he really does care a lot about his defensive reputation. And that ultimately is going to determine his long-term kind of legacy as a player. And it's been good to see so far.
Now, Harmon, I want to pose this question to you, because this was something that was talked about heading into the, like, after this game, right? Was Vasily Podkolzin gets the press box treatment. Now, I, for one, like, I won't spend too much time talking about this, but I, for one, wasn't really, you know, I didn't think it was a huge deal. Like, talk to me after Podkolzin sat for 10 or 20 games. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we have to assume he's going to be sitting against Seattle, because when you win, you rarely change your lineup if you're Travis Green. Like, that's just what we know about Travis Green. So what are your thoughts, I guess, on this, you know, benching for Vasily Podkolzin?
So this one's interesting, because in a lot of situations, I'm sympathetic to a coaching staff. And I think just inherently, as fans and media on the outside, we can be biased towards the younger guy, right? He's young, he's exciting, top prospect. You kind of visualize all of the potential in a player. And I think sometimes fans can be overboard in their enthusiasm. And when I look at a guy like Jake Virtanen, right? Like, that's a situation where the coaching staff was criticized for a long time about, why is Jake not in the top six? Why is Jake not doing this? Blah, blah, blah. And like, when you paid closer attention, you could see the justification for why Virtanen wasn't getting those opportunities over some of the veterans. I don't think this is one of those cases. This is one of those circumstances for me where I don't think Vasily Podkolzin should have been benched. And again, this is coming from someone who I usually sympathize with a coach's perspective. I just don't see it here. And the reason why is, when I look at Alex Chiasson, for starters, power play one, I don't think it needs Chiasson, to be completely honest. And I get the rationale. I'm sure the coaching staff looked at, okay, PP1 scored a couple times against Philly when Chiasson was in the lineup. And, you know, it's been driver since. So, okay, they're thinking, Let's get Chiasson into the mix. Maybe that can get power play one going. For starters, I don't agree with that logic, because the reason power play one wasn't working was A, because of the entries, and B, because it was stationary, especially on the flanks and the perimeter. And I don't think that has anything to do with who's playing net front.
Thing is, if I can cut in here for a second, is the entries. Like, you bring up a really good point. Where is Chiasson on entries? Not really helping, like, that much. And the drop pass, having that be your go-to to enter. If you have a guy like Chiasson completely taken out of play, it's another option that's gone along with the guy dropping the puck. You basically have three options. You could skate, you go left, or you can go right with your pass. That's all you have to enter, and I think that's something that's hurting them.
Yeah, and we saw in the 5-on-3, and thank goodness the coaching staff put Brock Besser out for the for the 5-on-3. He scores. I think Brock Besser's good enough to be the net front guy on PP1, and then I think about the other element is, at even strength, Alex Chiasson's been a defensive liability. You look at that first game against Edmonton, Oilers' opening goal by Jesse Puljujarvi. It came because Chiasson, for some reason, decided to pinch into the middle, because the winger is supposed to be responsible for covering the points, and he pinched into the middle for some reason, and Darnell Nurse had a chance to walk straight down Broadway, and he took the shot, and Puljujarvi banked home the rebound. That was a breakdown that in large part came because of Chaisson. And then the opening goal against Detroit, the Robbie Fabbri deflected goal, that was because Chaisson made a beeline to the puck carrier at towards the middle of the blue line, and he missed, and then Mark Stahl had a chance to walk down and hit Fabbri mm-hmm. for the slap pass. Like, Chaisson's been a defensive liability, and when I look at Pod Colson too, I get Dave's point that, yeah, it's only a game, but I just, the thing with Pod Colson, I really would want to be cognizant of is the confidence aspect, because I think with him, he's someone who you can, I don't want him to have the thought in the back of his mind of, man, if I mess up, I'm going to be back in the press box. Because that's what it was in the KHL.
Exactly. You're exactly right.
He couldn't play his game. He had to go out and be this grinder, just dump and chase. And I don't want him doing that. I want Pod Colson to have the confidence to try things, to make plays. And I think, go back to that Buffalo game, there weren't a lot of silver linings in that. But that first period, that Miller, Pod Colson, Dowling line, like, we saw Pod Colson's little button hook, the pass fired down to Miller, and Pod Colson didn't get the assist on the play, but he was instrumental to that goal. And I'm just like, I see his confidence growing, and it's like he's back in the press box now. I'm just like, he needs reps. I don't want him in and out of the lineup, and just, I think just let him play. Like, let him, it's fine if he makes mistakes in the bottom six. I'm not saying he needs to play 15, 16 minutes a night. I have no problems if there are situations where it's like 10 minutes left in the third period, you're defending a lead and you want to sit him on the bench, fine, do that.
Yeah.
But just let him play, let him grow. And that's just one of the things that it kind of, usually things like this don't bug me. This time it kind of bugs me.
I agree. I'm obviously, people are going to know that I'm going to be mad that Pod Colson was benched. I'm with you in a lot of, you made a lot of really good points there, honestly. Like, the thing about Pod Colson that you'd like to see is him be able to reach his potential. And I think something that was talked about so much about him in the KHL was just, there was no chance, right? Because for good reason, I mean, not really good reason, but I guess from Ska's point of view, Vasily Pod Colson was never going to reach his potential there. He was never going to reach his potential in the KHL because he was coming over to the NHL. So if you're going to put him into positions where you want him to hit his potential at the NHL level, you want to just build as much as you can and build and get him reps in the NHL so that he, like you said, is able to be confident and try these things. And you brought up the, I guess, the third assist that he got the other day because he didn't get run technically. Gains the zone on that completely, makes a great play, good pass. I just think that I look at the other players on this Canucks lineup and then I look at guys playing 7 minutes a night, playing 6 minutes a night in Lamico. Like, why is Pod Colson not in the lineup doesn't make sense to me. I really disagree with this one as well. I think that he's a guy, out of everyone on the NHL roster, he needs NHL reps the most. He need, like, Kyle Burrows, great, good to have him in the NHL. He needs to get some NHL reps to see if he's really a third pairing guy. But your first round pick, 10th overall, who looks like the type of player that you would like to build and build and build and get him to a point like he was in the KHL playoffs last year, where he was able to make a huge difference on a team. Imagine if they can get Pod Colson to not even like a similar level, because I think asking Pod Colson to be the leading scorer of the Canucks in the playoffs is a lot in his rookie season, but he is going to elevate his game when he gets to those type of moments. I just want to see if they're able to get him to elevate his game earlier than that. Like, I still feel that he's timid. He's playing on the outside. He's not moving his feet enough. Like, Travis Green's points that he brings up about Vasily Pod Colson are really good. And the only thing that I'll give Green the benefit of the doubt here is that he talked about it in the post game when I think Drancer asked him about the Pod Colson benching and scratching. And he said, you know, we worked on a lot of things with Pod Colson today. Like, he got a lot of work in that's going to help him in the long run. I hope that a lot of that is sort of video work or being able to say, like, because there are things you can spot with Pod Colson where it's like, man, it'd be good for if sure. he was moving his feet here. If he was really skating hard here, I think when we saw him play on the line with Miller and Pettersson, it was very clear to see that there was, like, he wasn't moving his feet well enough. But he's another example of a guy who, yeah, I can see why they don't play him in the last 10 minutes of a game when it's tied or if you're winning by one. That's totally fine. But he's a guy you got to start getting reps, and he's a guy that can move around in the lineup. And I'd like to see him just get a run with a guy like Nils Höglander. We talk about Nils Höglander being the spark plug every week on this show. Those two got to play together, man. At some point, those two have to play together. Like, they really do. They play such a similar game when they're on. The thing about Podkolzin and Höglander are so different is Höglander's found it in the NHL immediately, like in a snap of fingers when he hit the NHL, he knew how to be on 24/7 every time he's on the ice. We're not really seeing that from Podkolzin yet, but goddamn, man, I tell you, if when he starts playing with Höglander, I think that's when Podkolzin's going to be able to find that zone where he can be on and in fifth gear every single shift.
Chris, it's just like he barely played in the KHL. And like it's even just like from a playing time perspective, and I completely get the coaching staff's perspective, but it's also just like it's only game five of the regular season. Like this isn't like game 78 and you're trying to make and it's like a do or die, essentially like a playoff game. We're so early into the season, and I just don't want that to be like a mental hurdle for Podkolzin where it's like,
well, when it's so early, it's in your head at all times.
Exactly.
Right? Because if it happens in game five, it can happen in game seven. It can happen in game 15.
It's going to happen in game six.
It will happen. Like, that's the thing. To see him get benched back-to-back games.
Especially, what does Chiasson bring?
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that, you know, we're going to get to, we'll talk about the power play more in the poll question when we get to there. But bench, I think this is not the biggest mistake, like, in the terms of what the season is and how it is. But it's just, this one's a mistake that's pretty obvious to me. Sitting out Vasily Podkolzin, who really just needs these reps more than anyone in the end. Like, he needs to get these reps to build his confidence, like you said. And he doesn't have to be, he can be on a fourth line. Like, why is he not playing on the fourth line and being there instead of, you know, I know Justin Dowling's going to kill penalties. I know Highmore's going to kill penalties. But you have enough bodies that can go out there and kill penalties themselves. This ice time is way more valuable in Podkolzin's hands than it is Highmore or Lamico or Dowling or Chiasson. Like, right? Like, you know, when Chiasson was playing on the first line to cover for Besser, I understood it a little bit because, you know, Podkolzin's probably not going to hop up into that spot. But when you're putting Chiasson in at the fourth line because he helps your power play, I don't think so. I don't think that's the better move for the power play. Like I said, we'll get to this in the second half with the poll question, but I don't think the fourth line is better with Chiasson. I don't think it's even close to better with Chiasson.
I'm sorry to say.
I'm glad you broke down the two plays from Chiasson.
Sorry, that's a little mean.
Because I don't think a lot of people saw that when they watched those two goals go in, because the problem was you didn't immediately see that it was Chiasson's fault because there was time, because you were saying the guy was open in front of the net. That's probably the center's guy to be down there covering that guy. But I remember Pettersson had to move up to cover on that play.
Yeah.
Because Chiasson blew his assignment.
You could see it in the video. Yeah,
exactly. If you watched it if you just saw like how the puck went in, you'd be like, oh, what's the center doing? Not covering his zone. But the 2 seconds prior to that forced Pettersson to move out of the zone to go cover a different guy, leaves another guy wide open. Yeah. Chiasson, I think he can fit in the lineup at some point, but to me, he's the 13th. Yeah. Well, I can see Chiasson playing over a Dowling or a Highmore in certain situations, but honestly, last few games, I think Highmore and Dowling have played well enough to not come out of the lineup. Like, and I think it's weird because Highmore right now is the one getting third line minutes, right? Like, he was on Miller's line the other day to start, or not Miller's line. He was on Dickinson's line to start. And I thought they were fine together, but Podkolzin's another guy you'd like to see just get some more of a run there, especially when, like, why? It's weird how Podkolzin's played all these times and hasn't gotten that opportunity with Höglander yet. Like, all the line combinations that have happened, how many times?
I don't think they want two young guys. And the reason is Höglander.
But with Dickinson,
Höglander's been so good. But the thing is, he still has defensive work to do. Like, we don't notice it. But, like, I remember doing a deep dive a few months ago on JT Miller at center. And as a byproduct, I got to see a lot of Höglander video just up close and personal. And, like, he's still figuring out the defensive zone. And I think the coaching staff looks at Podkolzin and says, he's still figuring out the defensive zone. And I don't know if they want to play those guys together for that reason right now.
I think it could work with Dickinson though. I think if you're like, Dickinson has looked really good at least the game against the Blackhawks, by far his best game.
Yeah.
I think the smart decision would be getting Podkolzin back and getting him right there.
Yeah.
To
Lots of good points being made. We'll pick up this conversation and another one on the other side of the break. We'll also get to our poll question. Keep it locked, keep it loaded on Canucks Conversation. Muddlers Pink Lemonade. We are so excited to tell you guys about Muddlers Pink Lemonade, my drink of choice. You guys have all seen it by now. Faber and I went out drinking. That was my drink of choice first night.
I think that the catchphrase for this ad has to be, it's the only alcohol that Quads likes.
Absolutely. It's so good. It's absolutely the best pink lemonade on the market by far. A lot of these other drinks are just a little too sweet for me. Like, I don't really like that. And this is like a nice mix because I also don't like when it tastes too much like alcohol. But this is like the perfect balance. There's a reason that it was the drink I got when we went to the Parallel Street Kitchen as well.
It, absolutely, man. It is the sweet spot for Quads in the alcoholic beverage realm. You can find it, like you said, at Parallel 49 Street Kitchen and in a ton of liquor stores. All the BC liquor stores have it. It's the bright pink cans, Muddler's Pink Lemonade. Go out and try it today. Alert, alert. Parallel 49 is bringing back one of its favorite beers of the winter. The Salty Scott is back, folks. The Scotch Ale we all know and love is now available across British Columbia in their government and private liquor stores. Enjoy a strong caramel flavor, a salty bite, and a generous 7.5% alcohol. It only takes one of these tall boys to get the night going. So go out and try a Parallel 49 Salty Scott today.
And a huge thank you to all of our sponsors here at the Canucks Conversation Podcast. We will get to the poll question right now as I pull it up. I should have done this before we started, but it is brought to you by @FuelTheFan on Twitter, Blue Orca Sports Memorabilia. Go check them out. A lot of good stuff. Signed Thatcher Demko pictures that you can buy. Those are what I'd be buying if I was buying.
I got a feeling Demko's hard to get an autograph from.
You know what? I don't doubt that.
Depends, though.
What makes you say that,
though? Well, just like the way that Demko is after a loss compared to a win, very different, dude. So I wonder, like, getting a, you know, maybe that would be like what the signature is even like more valuable. It's like, this is a signed Thatcher Demko picture after a loss.
He's two different dudes. Like, there's definitely like a, I wonder if he's like, he's got like a split personality, like a Gemini or something, where it's like, sometimes he's in a really good, like, lighthearted mood and like, I remember the 2019-20 season doing like breakout predictions, right? Asking every guy on the team who's going to have a huge year in the season. Everyone's going, oh, like PD, Quinn, you know, the odd Bo in there. And Demko goes, Tim Schaller. And just like smiling, laughing. And I just like chuckle. And he's like, oh, what's so funny? It's just like, it's just so funny. And then there are other days where he's just like a brick wall.
Yeah,
there's just like nothing.
Yeah. Didn't Tim Schaller actually have a pretty good start to that season?
He did. He had four goals. Like
Demko
Tim Schaller, your favorite team Quads in the AHL, the Ontario Reign.
Ah, very
Tim Schaller, top line center.
I like Tim Schaller a lot. When Tanev, Markstrom, and Stetcher left in the offseason, and Toffoli as well, Bo Horvat made an Instagram post being like, gonna miss these guys, right?
I remember
and
that.
Tim Schaller comments on it. He goes, where's my appreciation post? Oh man, yeah.
Who's gonna get an appreciation post this year?
Oh,
we haven't really thought about that from the team. Like, imagine Tyler Toffoli getting an appreciation post. Like, are they
like a Videotron?
Yeah, they just like play all of
Edler. Edler's for sure.
Edler for sure. I'm just thinking like
they're gonna package Louis
Beagle
Antoine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Louis here for so long.
Yeah, they'll be here.
By the way, seeing the Patty Kane 1,000 game silver stick. I'm not going to lie. The one thing I'll miss is Louis at 980 NHL games. Mm-hmm. Would have been 20 games away. Can you imagine if he would have had his silver stick ceremony at Rogers Arena?
Could you imagine if it's like when he, like, I don't know. Maybe you got to check the schedule.
I actually did. He's got 20 games and Vancouver comes up around the like 26 game mark. So we'll have to like miss a few games.
Yeah.
So very possible. Hopefully a few healthy scratches here and there.
Oh man, that would be golden.
Can you imagine?
Oh man, that would be fantastic.
If Vancouver gets to be the place where Louis Erickson celebrates 1,000 career games.
Oh man. I hope someone in Arizona has a sense of humor.
I'll give someone my Louis Erickson Lunar New Year jersey. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I love that so much. I think Tyler Myers is gonna get that big cheer as soon as it's opening night. I'm telling you.
I know you're booked on this.
I am set that Tyler Myers is
he'll get a nice cheer.
Huge cheer for that Duncan Keith hit.
Like, yeah.
I want
they,
to be
they
standing
have
ovation.
To they have to include that in some kind of like
highlight
video
package.
Highlight pack.
Yeah.
They have to. Home opener, get the fans jacked up.
Yeah. And they should just like slow it down. Like slow-mo.
Slow-mo.
And like that's the longest clip.
They just
in
play
the
like
thing.
A full song with just that hit on repeat from different angles. like as many different angles as possible.
That would just get people so excited. Like no one would bat an eye. Everybody would absolutely.
Did I tell you about the so what I was doing when I worked on Sportsnet the day after? Did I tell you guys about this? So I worked on Sportsnet the day after that big hit, and everyone was hyped about Myers, right? Everyone. I was doing the People show. Everyone's so hyped about Myers. So I edited like a bunch of songs and replaced like big points of songs with Harnerand Singh's call of Tyler Myers. Like he did like this huge call with his
That's
hit.
So funny.
So I changed like, you know, the song, it's called F You by CeeLo Green. And I changed, like, I took out the, obviously the F word. I can't say that on radio. So I changed that to Harnerand's, I'm sorry, I'm pronouncing his name probably wrong.
Oh, but you got it. Okay, pretty good, actually.
His Tyler Myers call over top of, like, the drive around town with the girl I love. And I'm like, Tyler Myers, you.
That's so funny.
And then we did, like, that song where it's like, here comes the Tyler Myers. it was like here comes the Boom remix. Oh, and there was a bunch. People were sending in texts. And yeah, that was some so quality funny. Radio right there.
That's fantastic.
I could play one actually probably if I was able to find it on the podcast form. I might have to dig through it a little bit here.
Yeah, you take your time. I will read out the poll question. We'll get Harmon's thoughts on it while you try to dig that clip up, Chris. So again, brought to you by Blue Orca Sports Memorabilia at Fuel the Fan on Twitter. Go check them out. Our poll question today. Who should be on the first power play unit? Brock Besser, Garland or Hoglander, Chason or Chason with the alternate spelling that was actually on his jersey in an NHL game. And of course, I'm angry. Harmon, 71% of people right now saying Brock Besser, 19% say Garland or Hoglander, 3% for Chason or Chason.
I was
going to
guess 3% for Chason.
7% say I'm angry. Harmon, your thoughts?
I really think it has to be Besser, and you know, for it kind of depends too if they want to keep their current configuration. I mean, they at least scored the other game against Chicago, so I think, you know, they may obviously keep Miller and Pedersen on the flanks and Bo in the bumper. And so if that's the current configuration, I think you still need that right shot guy. So I think that precludes someone like a lefty like Hoglander, and from there it's like Besser and Garland. Besser has a little bit more experience in that net front position, and yeah, I mean, we've talked about Chason. I think the upgrade, even in terms of being a power, in terms of power play specialty between Besser and Chason, like I don't think Chason's, like, if anything, he's a marginal upgrade in that specific slot. I think Besser's more than good enough. He scored the other night on the 5-on-3. I would just roll with him.
So you're going Miller on the left. You're not moving Miller from the left side.
You know what? I wouldn't be opposed to, like, if they want to change the look of the power play, which I think they may have to do at some point, because I don't know if you're noticing this as well, but it's, I don't know if overcoached is the right word, but it's like this power play has the idea of, okay, we've got this few looks we want to go to. And like the few looks are Miller to Bo directly in the bumper, Miller down to the right shot guy, so like a Chason or a Besser, the tic-tac-toe back to Horvat,
yep.
Or it's like the Miller goes downhill and then curls back to hit Hughes for the one-timer, and then it's just like Hughes setting up Pedersen for the one-timer. It's like those are the few looks, and like that's it. And like it's almost as if these players are like programmed. It's like a computer program where it's like they're looking for those few plays, and if those plays aren't there, they like just don't know what to do. And it's like penalty kills, because this power play look has been the same since essentially 2019-20. Like I can just see when they went to the tic-tac-toe, for example, and I think it was like the Detroit game, like they just knew right away that that was coming. And it's like there's no improvisation there. There's no room for like creativity. So I think they may have to change it. And if they do change it, yeah, I wouldn't mind, you know, I wouldn't mind, say, like a Miller at the net front. I wouldn't even mind, like, I think they need to use Pedersen in a more dynamic way. I wouldn't even mind using him on his strong side, make him go on his downhill side. Allow him to be in that kind of JT Miller spot where he's the primary play initiator. Get him involved as a playmaker. And maybe then you have Brock Besser on the opposite flank as your downhill guy, as another really good shooter.
Anything, you know, makes sense right now, right? Like anything has, the problem with the power play to me right now is like, you know, they have a decent percentage. Like they're still scoring, but there's so many where there's just not a scoring chance.
Yeah.
Like I that's something that I would look at this power play right now is like, I wouldn't look at their, how many goals they've scored. I'd look at how many actual like scoring chances they're getting per 60, because that has to be a lot lower than a lot of other teams in the league, because they are sometimes just not even being able to get into the zone. Like you've talked about earlier, but you're right. Teams are starting to figure out, like, teams do great job with video work in 2021. They know what is coming from the Vancouver Canucks' power play unit, but
how many looks has Horvat gone in the bumper?
Yeah, oh, that's
none.
Yeah,
it's only a couple. Very, it's been few and far
because of that guy. You've touched on this. Like, they don't have the Toffoli making the pass down there anymore. Remember, that was just game over when that was happening with Toffoli. But that, to me, it's just, yeah, you're right. Like, you bring up a really good point with Pettersson. Pettersson can score from anywhere on the ice. He just happens to have a really good one-timer, right? Like, he happens to have a really good one-timer, but the dude can score from anywhere on the ice. He doesn't, I hate that he's stuck there, that he's just stuck there in that spot. Like, stationary. At least, even JT Miller moves around a lot. Pettersson, it's just like, the way that Pettersson's going to score on the power play is if a perfect pass is made by Quinn Hughes, or if JT Miller draws enough guys out of position to make that pass across. It doesn't feel like there's another way for Pettersson to score, and there should be, because he's very capable of doing it, and he's capable of doing it everywhere on the ice. So that's why we talk about this team, this power play being so stagnant and not moving around enough. Why isn't Pettersson even just moving around the ice quite a bit? Like, they're smart players. They're smart offensive players, and I think that they could be able to adjust to a guy moving around the ice. Like, that part is just, it's so confusing to me that they have to stay in their same spot.
Two things on that. I'm even thinking about it. Like, since his rookie season, how many one-time bomb goals has Pettersson scored? Not that many.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been that many. Like, he's gone in it from time to time, but that's going to be bound to happen when you have a player of Pettersson's,
like,
caliber,
honestly, if I were to guess,
in that one spot, right? Yeah. Like,
something like maybe 12 in two seasons, you think? Or is that high, low?
I'm talking just one-timers.
Yeah, one-timers. I'd say...
I mean, I don't know off the top of my head, but just, you know, thinking about it, I can't recall too many. And, like, obviously a huge part of that is because penalty kills are cheating over.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is... So, number one, and part of that is because Pettersson... I don't know if you've noticed this. I think I've talked to Sat about this. We've both noticed, like, Pettersson needs kind of, like, the pass in the perfect kind of slot, and it's a very kind of like narrow, like he needs it on a tee to really get the one time. Otherwise, he's very picky with what passes he's willing to shoot on, and I think that's part of it. And then the other thing too is for as good of a shot as Pettersson has, we know with what kind of vision he has. He's such a good playmaker, and you know, from that left side, you know, I could see him, you know, I think it would take him time. And I think that's maybe the one kind of consternation you'd have about that new look. But the idea of him picking up speed downhill, and the thing, and this is the key when you're coming on your strong side, you know, obviously the con is you don't have your one timer, but
right. The
benefit is you're coming down, you have speed downhill. And because of your body position, when you're on a strong side, penalty killers can't tell if you're going to shoot or pass. And that's where Pettersson is a dual threat, and he's so effective because, especially if you position Besser at the opposite flank, now all of a sudden you have the opportunity to hit the cross seam. And think about
also on top of that, with the guy he has the best chemistry with.
Yeah. And here's the other thing too, is like, look at all these other power plays around the league. Like when Chicago scored, Edmonton, so many of the top power play units just take advantage of that seam pass through the middle. And, you know, with Vancouver's current positioning, they're not, I guess, like using that seam pass. And, you know, I wonder if things get stale, right? Like, I'm not saying they need to make this change now, but if things get stale and they need to try a new look, I'd be thinking about how can I get Pettersson more involved?
Even with that seam pass that you talk about, like McDavid and Draisaitl, good example of it.
Yeah.
Pettersson's still staying in that spot for the one timer when Draisaitl gets down deep, like he gets deep in there to get that pass available for McDavid. Right now, when JT Miller is the guy circling and gaining all that power when he's coming in on his left side, it's not like Pettersson's going towards the net. He's still staying in that spot because he's waiting for Miller to dump it back to Hughes so he can dump it over to him. You also need to see some more out of Pettersson. And I think for him, it's just like, listen, you love your one timer. We all love the one timer when it happens and when it works. But I think Pettersson has to move more himself just on the power play unit too.
And like, you know what's special about Edmonton's power play? I mean, they were league best. I think they were historic last season. Watched them again last night and nearly impossible to defend against. Why? Because they have an endless arsenal of potential plays. And the reason is every guy on that power play can play any position. Like, I was watching Nugent Hopkins was on the left flank. You know, I've seen McDavid there. And, you know, you saw McDavid and Draisaitl exchanging spots on the power play. And it's just like, all these players in the flank and the bumper, they're interchangeable. Like, I've seen situations where Draisaitl's been in the bumper last season, and it's just, there's so much fluidity. And I think part of it is going to come down to, like, I'm not saying that's what the Canucks need to get to. I don't think that's a realistic expectation. Some of these guys are so young. But the point is, like, if Edmonton's power play is the bar, which right now it is, it's world class.
Yeah.
What makes it special is how unpredictable it is and how many different ways they can beat you. And if you kind of work your way backwards and look at Vancouver's power play, they need to just add a little bit of that ability to, if penalty killers know what looks you're going to go for, some ways of, you got to have a plan C when plan B doesn't work. And you got to be able to adapt and improvise.
Now, Harmon, if you were the power play coach, how are you changing things? Other than, obviously, I know you've said get Pettersson more involved, but like, what other plays are you seeing from them or that you'd like to see from them? Because right now it's, you know, it's the one timer and then it's obviously passing it into the slot and going for that other one timer. So what are you looking at? Like, what's another play you'd think that this personnel can pull off?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's really interesting. I think, again, when I talk about Pettersson potentially on his strong side, and I'd have to go back because I remember I did something I did something a while back on the idea of Pettersson and Besser on their strong sides, and my memory is a little bit hazy, and I'd like mapped out different looks, and you know, I have to really like sit down and think about it because you have to make sure the handedness all works together. It's kind of like, it is a complex, complex thing, and it's not easy doing this. It's a lot easier to point out kind of what needs to change. But again, just even when you're in that, Pettersson left side, Besser right side, like just the seam pass itself, and how those guys can, like, once those guys pick up chemistry, they're going to be able to, like, when Pettersson's, and this even happens, like, if you pay attention to Edmonton's power play with McDavid, what'll happen is they'll, like, a lot of times they'll reload out of the, like, when let's say Hughes has the puck or it's on the other flank, the guy on the left flank, the left shot, will kind of like reload around out of the blue line and calm down so that when he has the puck, he's just like barreling down with speed. And that's when you have that speed, you know, you could set Miller down low and, or you could go, you could hit that cross seam. You have Bowen in the bumper. And like, even if it's not those looks, even something like the bump back to Hughes for the one timer. I feel like once you attack with more speed, it's going to draw more attention and it creates more space. Whereas, like, you know, even if, let's say the Canucks want to keep their current configuration, one thing I'd like to see them do more is that left flank guy. Just, I'm finding it hard to articulate myself. I don't think I'm doing it very clearly, but a lot of times it's just that guy will leave the zone momentarily, just like reload so that once he picks up the puck, he's got speed. And sometimes it can feel like when JT Miller has the puck, he's too deep into the zone already. It's almost like he's a little bit too close to the faceoff circle,
which is why they have to come out of the blue line, because you want full speed at the blue line.
Yeah,
with the puck,
so you have
boom,
space and you have speed, and like that's what draws penalty killers in. That's what makes it a little bit more dynamic. So even that like little minor adjustment, I think, would be really helpful. And so, I mean, I'm no power play kind of expert or anything, but like those are just some of the thoughts that come to mind. Obviously, coming up with solutions, it's not going to be easy, but with the amount of talent this group has, like they should be able to configure looks if penalty killers are at the point where they can figure things out.
And you touch on the talent, like that's a good example of, like, people believe Pettersson can be one of the best, you know, dynamic offensive players in the NHL in the coming years, then maybe he should be the guy getting that pass instead of JT Miller, who we've seen do it. And I think we've liked when JT Miller does have the puck and he does it, because it's a different look, right? It's something different that we haven't seen from the power play when they're just stuck in their same positions. That's why for me, it moving Pettersson on that side, like I'm definitely open to the thought of it because it's just something
it's
different.
It's just an idea. You don't have to do it. Like, it's just like, hey, that's one possibility.
But you know what? It's not even like you're completely changing the power play because maybe he runs in and then it doesn't work out and a rotation happens and he's back on the right side again. Like, see, people don't, you're not just stuck on the left side or the right side. Like, the thing that we're kind of both hinting at here is having that fluidity that you mentioned. Like, that can happen in throughout the power play. It doesn't mean that, like, oh, this power play, we're going to put Besser on the left side. This power play, we're going to have Pettersson on the right side. Next time, though, we're going to, if it doesn't score, maybe we'll try Pettersson on the left side. It's like, dude, they can skate around the ice. They can move from side to side. They can go to different areas of the ice. That should be a real thing they should be focusing on right now. But I also want to say, like, I'm looking at the poll question right now, and everybody's voting for Brock Besser. There's a small majority of people saying that Garland or Höglander could make a difference.
Minority of people.
What did I say?
Majority, which indicates the...
Well, anyways,
the greater part of it.
All right. Sounds good.
Sorry.
Anyways, damn it.
Small minority of people voting Höglander or Garland.
Yeah, those people, the majority, as I call them, they are voting for a different look because I think that when you do look at the type of players that Garland and Höglander can both be in the offensive zone, they're the type of guys who aren't going to stay in one spot. That's what I think. If I was building the five guys, I would really consider it. I would really consider putting Garland and Höglander there if you believe your power play is not moving well enough. Because I think those guys, if you let them run free, they're going to force other players to move as well.
I actually agree with you there. And part of the reason is that Garland goal that was scored against Detroit. Him able to pick that corner is, look, if you're on a power play and it's as stationary as the Canucks power play usually is, and you have a guy who can shoot like that, you have that threat available. Like, I'm not saying he's going to snipe off the back of goalies' heads every time the Canucks have a power play, but I'm saying, you know, like you mentioned, just the speed he brings and the movement that he's going to cause just by moving himself is going to be something that this power play should value.
Like, not to mention getting pucks out of corners, too.
Exactly. Like, you know, same with Höglander, like, wins most of his board battles, right? And like, I like the idea of having a guy like that on the power play. I really do.
And with that, you move likely Besser is likely the guy who comes off.
Which I've said, Besser on the second unit, which, not a bad idea.
You know, the other night I did like the look of that because, looking at what that umbrella part of the power play can look like if you have Besser, OEL, Jack Rathbone, that's a good second. That's where Chiasson fits to me. That's where Chiasson fits because you have those three shooters. Let them go wild and let Chiasson hang around in the crease. Let him just be a net front presence for when you have those three shooters that you just want to get as many opportunities as possible. And something with the second unit that I've liked is look who's carrying the puck up every time from their own zone. It's Oliver Ekman-Larsson, and there's no one for him to drop the puck to. You guys notice this with the second unit? They don't do the drop pass. Like, they come up with Oliver Ekman-Larsson as the furthest guy back, two options that are already at the blue line, and then two options on his wings. They don't have a drop pass on the second unit, and it helps them gain the zone a lot. So I know that the drop pass isn't the worst thing in the world. I know it works for every team, but to see the second unit have so much more success at gaining the zone, maybe the first unit needs to do something similar as well, or at least have like different options to gain the zone as well. But all right, I think that's enough power play talk for a little bit. We've probably gone on for another hour.
Yeah.
Do you want to hear my Tyler Myers remix here?
Yes. Is it ready?
It's ready. Let's to
do it.
Go. Turn me up.
Yeah, you're turned
up. This is how I started the People Show on after the episode of after Tyler Myers' special day.
All we need is
Oh my gosh, that was fantastic.
Some also, quality stuff there.
I'm the only one wearing headphones, so Harmon can't really react, unfortunately.
I'll play it for Harmon later.
Harmon, you'll hear it later. It was fantastic. The listeners, I'm sure, absolutely loved it.
I forgot it when it goes, whatever, blow the scene. It's all right, it's all right. Boom, here comes Tyler Myers. That's what it was.
It is solid. It is, yeah, you did well with that. You absolutely did well with that. Should we close out there? or do you want to touch on any other topics?
Oh, man, I don't think I've done much prospect reporting over the last week. I mean,
yeah, do you have anything?
No, we're going to go out to Abbotsford, get a chance to, I think Harm and I were kind of touching on this. I mean, maybe we'll be a little prospect report here. We're really curious to see how Klimovich is fitting in. That's something you and I were talking about in the car ride over here. I know that, you know, we're not spending, you know, even myself, I haven't been able to watch every single shift. I watched two of the three games. They've only played three at this point. So I've watched two of the three games. So I missed one. I didn't get a chance to see all the Klimovich stuff, but the kid scoring two goals in two HL games, it's got to mean something. And I'm excited to see him in person tonight. But the big thing is, since we've had no media on the road with them, it's hard to kind of get the vibe of what people are thinking about Klimovich, because there are times in the games that I have seen where Klimovich still, you know, floats a little bit. He doesn't do all the things that you want to be doing defensively. I wonder how the communication's going with Trent Cull, and that's something we're obviously going to have to ask about today and get another chance on Sunday as well. I'll be at both games getting some quotes from them and have a nice little write-up probably Monday. We'll think we'll do a big Monday wrap-up for AHL. We're not going to wrap up every game at Canucks Army, but Monday we'll have a big article from some stuff out there in Abbotsford. I'm super curious to see what Trent Cull is thinking about Klimovich right now, because there's a lot of things that a coach will hate about what Klimovich is doing from the things that I've seen, but the kid's putting the puck in the back of the net, and that's something you got to be excited about for an 18-year-old.
Absolutely. Harmon, anything to add before I close out?
No, just excited for the, well, not excited for the, I was about to say I'm excited for the drive out. The drive out's not going to be fun, but I'm excited for the game in Abbotsford, and it'll be fun.
Let's touch on the drive for a second. Literally, it's like afternoon on a Friday. Friday's a bad time to drive out there anyways. Just looked at the map. It's about an hour and a half right now.
It's going to be even longer now.
It's going to be longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of fun. You guys enjoy that? Yeah,
drive meanwhile, back. Quads will slack off as always.
No, I'm actually going to go home and write an article.
Friends over and going out for drinks probably. No, building a Ferris wheel tomorrow.
I got work
probably watching an NBA game. Yeah. Or something.
I got a lot of work to do actually. Man,
bumping elbows with all his friends. And
Yeah. I got to get out of here.
Shaking hands, shaking babies.
Okay. taking a
kissing hands.
Different direction. But we'll close it out there for Chris Faber and, of course, Harmon Dial. My name is David Quadrelli. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of The Canucks Conversation.
Thanks for listening to Canucks Conversation, delivered by DoorDash. Hit the subscribe button to never miss an episode.
How about keep it to a thank you, Jim?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.